Tyson's still so Mr. Bubbles. That sounds bad, doesn't it? The man who knows all about everything sparkling. How are you this morning, Tyson?
Hello, Simon. Hello, Nick. Great to be back on again, and nothing better than champagne for the grand finale of today's show.
Absolutely.
Mate, perfectly said. Well done. this is the season. So I suppose we want to sort of have a chat about what we should be drinking, anything that you're discovering, little secrets and tips about bubbles that that's your day is tasting all sorts of sparkling wine.
Well, it is the season, as you say, and with spring racing and of course Melbourne Cup, it's officially the start of sparkling season in the grand city of Melbourne. But you know, the recent trends have been showing us that there really is no end to sparkling season. And I'm in Brisbane, and we drink champagne and sparkling all the year through, as I know you do now in Melbourne. And in fact, that trend is something that is astonishing everybody globally by looking at Australia, because we're importing 10 times the amount of champagne that we were in 2001. Gee. In the last year. And that makes us the fastest growing champagne nation on the planet. So there is much to celebrate.
So how would we line up in terms of consumption of champagne outside of France?
So we are per head now the biggest champagne consuming country on earth outside of Europe itself. We are ahead of Japan. We're ahead of the US. We're ahead of everyone else apart from obviously France and Germany and Italy, very big champagne consumers there. But those trends in Australia are quite remarkable, and we are drinking more and more. We've imported a record 8.5 million bottles in 2017, which is just incredible.
Yeah. So obviously it's a beautiful drink, but what's led that, Tyson? Has it been all your good work that's happened? That's
created very kind demand. I think it's largely coincidental that those trends correspond with the first publication of my champagne guide.
There you are.
In 2010, and also the growth of my Taste Champagne events nationally too have coincided with that growth too. Now, how much of that is thanks to those initiatives, and how much is other things? I'm not going to make that call. But we're seeing some amazing trends. And one of the trends in Australia, and in fact globally, particularly in Australia, is that we are drinking less, but we're drinking better.
Yep.
So people are trading up from cheap inland sparkling wines to the great sparkling wines of Tasmania, and from the great sparklings of Tasmania to champagne itself. So we're spending more, we're drinking more sensibly, we're drinking less cask wine, we're drinking less beer, we're drinking less spirits, but we are really focusing on quality. And of course, in the sparkling world, champagne is the ultimate. And then we're drinking more regularly. Champagne used to be the birthday celebration and the annual hurrah, but now champagne is an every night beverage, and we're enjoying it with different cuisines. We're more, I think, creative in our choice of international cuisine, and we love everything from Japanese to Thai, and those sorts of foods, I think, lend themselves really well to the elegance of champagne. The other trend that plays into all of this, of course, is that our tastes are becoming more refined. So we are shying away from 15% Barossa Shiraz loaded up with new oak and going for more elegant reds like Pinot Noir from beautiful cool climate reds. And, of course, champagne is one of the most elegant and delicate of all beverages.
And it's so much more approachable from a price perspective. And I certainly remember it 20 years ago. It was almost out of the budgetary skyline.
Well, certainly it wouldn't be an every night drink at the money it used to be at.
Yep.
No, absolutely. And you can now buy beautiful champagne. The street price of Piper Heidsieck and Longson is regularly under $40. And they're beautifully made champagnes from well-regarded houses and perpetually discounted as well and readily available.
So it's that we shouldn't be suspicious about, you know, whether the quality is less than it used to be because the price is, you know, a third less or more in some cases.
Not at all.
No.
There's no question the quality of champagne now is much stronger than it was in years past. The reasons for the discounting are complicated and multifaceted, but particularly due to the fact, I think, that Europe's been in economic crisis for a decade now, and for the first time ever in the past year, there is as much champagne being exported outside of France as there has been consumed in France. Mm. And so the availability and the price of champagne has dropped globally, particularly in Australia, in response to the fact that there's less volume being consumed at home. But that's a trend that won't continue forever because the price of grapes in Champagne is at record values of 6, 7, 8 euros a kilogram, making it 3 or 4 times the price of top Australian fruits now. And what that means is that the houses are saying we can't sustain the prices that we're seeing in the market right now. So over the next decade, champagne prices will go up globally. That's inevitable. And we're currently at a beautiful heyday of champagne value, but at the same time, exceptional quality.
But we've got some fantastic local stuff to fall back on once that happens.
I'm in Tasmania this coming weekend, actually, for the Effervescence Festival, mm-hmm. which I've hosted now for 5 years, and it's a great celebration of the top Australian sparkling. I've recently come back from hosting my own events in New York and San Francisco, showcasing just how good Tasmanian sparkling is and wowing the great palates of the world. We've never seen better wines out of Tassie. They're now receiving international accolades multiple times every year, and beautiful estates like Arras, Jance, Clover Hill, and a new name called Bellebonne are really setting the benchmark for sparkling anywhere in the world outside of Champagne itself.
Do you think that the world is seeing Tasmania as I sort of feel it, its position here is just that, you know, clean water, clean and just pristine sort of climate and environment?
Absolutely, and it's really boutique by necessity, not by perhaps aspiration. Because it's an island, it's difficult to make wine there, it's expensive to make wine. It has to be on a small scale, and it is, and that equates not only to small-scale quality, but because it's cooler and more maritime than mainland Australia, it has some sort of a buffer, if you like, against some of the climatic extremes that we've been subjected to across southeastern Australia, meaning that this is the most suitable cool climate terroir in Australia for sparkling wines. And because of that, its reputation is starting to gain some traction, but it will always be small. And so while it's well sought after and well regarded by international markets, it's not something that's well known because there simply isn't the volume available to make it mainstream.
When you mentioned some of those brands, how long have the plantings been in for those guys? Is the quality just going to keep getting better from a fruit point of view?
Absolutely. If you talk to Nat Fry, who used to be the maker for Jance and now looking after the beautiful ones of Piper's Brook and her own brand Bellebonne, she says the best vineyards in Tasmania are yet to be planted. Now, the history of sparkling in Tasmania goes very deep. They, in fact, made what, as far as I can tell, was the first sparkling wine in Australia's history in the early 1800s. But there was very little sparkling production between that time and about 30 years ago, at which point there was some pioneering work in northern Tasmania particularly, but also in the south. So many of the vineyards now, I guess the Jance Vineyard was probably one of the first of the modern era to really specialise in sparkling, and that was planted in 1975. So there is some vine age there, but there's a lot more planting going in right now in response to the global growth. And will we see an increase in quality in the future? I've no doubt.
It's exciting, isn't it? I mean, fantastic to be putting these wines up on the world stage and you know, getting accolades. Tell us a bit about your guide, and I'm thinking this is probably a very good Christmas present for people. Tyson, are you there? I think that might have dropped off. So we'll just go to a quick break. Sorry, guys. We'll be back very shortly.
We know you enjoy wine, and so do we. That's why we developed a touring guide to find all the best wineries around Australia. Winehound is a free app for all phones. You can use it when touring the regions or to find wine events wherever you are. Download it now from the App Store or Google Play and look up the next guest winery to really feel part of the show. Winehound, for wine lovers who want to know more. Station sponsor.
Okay, we're back now with Tyson, I think. Are you there, Tyson?
Hey guys, sorry about that. I think we got so excited we overloaded the phone network and my reception dropped out.
That's
sorry about
exactly
that.
Right. And we were just having a lovely old time having a chat amongst ourselves.
very good.
Not realising you weren't there.
So we were just suggesting that maybe your guide is a good Christmas present for someone. So tell us a little.
Yeah,
bit
that's very kind. Thank you.
Tell us a little bit about it and what people should know.
So So the aspiration for the Champagne Guide, which is now in its fifth edition at the moment, was to create a buyer's guide to Champagne by trying to get behind the scenes, because Champagne is notoriously closed in its ability and perhaps desire to communicate the real story behind the wines and what actually makes them special, which to me is what these great wines of the world is all about. And yet so much of the websites and the marketing is around celebrity endorsements and popping bottles at sporting events and so forth. But what about the beautiful vineyards that go into each of these bottles? What about the historic stories of their makers and their philosophies and the nth level of degree that they're going to, more than ever, in the vineyards and the wineries to create the most special sparklings in the world? So my guide is an attempt to get behind the scenes of all that, tell the real stories, give some honest ratings to the wines, and there are some beautiful endorsements there of some of the great wines, and also some reviews for which I'm in quite some trouble with their makers, because some of the most famous sparkling wines in the world and some of the biggest produced in Champagne are not necessarily good drinks, and I'm quite prepared to say that, because they're not cheap and people need to know the difference.
That's a good point. So take some of the trial and error out of it from our point of view, because you've done the work for us.
Well, it's such an expensive product. You can't go out there and try every champagne yourselves as much as we might all like to, but there are so many in Australia now. Record numbers of champagnes on our shelf. The pricing, while it's good value for what it is, it's still not inexpensive. You can't buy decent champagne under $40. There are a lot of wines out there that are $100, $200, $300, $500, $1,000. And some of them are amazing and the most remarkable wine experiences you'll ever have. And some of them are a bit of the product of their own marketing success.
Yeah.
So I try to define the differences in my reviews.
So if we look at... So you're looking at sparkling in general, aren't you? So you'll have a look at Prosecco and I don't know, Cava and all sorts, and then Australian sparkling.
That's right. I look at sparklings from all across the world with a particular focus on champagne and Australian sparkling, because I believe that globally they are the benchmarks right now and certainly the most relevant for us here in Australia.
Yep.
Every year I publish my Australian sparkling report, which is free to download on my website, tysonstelzer.com. I review 500 different sparklings and pick the best of them from Australia, from sparkling reds right through to Proseccos and, of course, the great traditional method wines of Tasmania.
What a fantastic job. You get to the end and then you have to start all over again.
Exactly, yeah, that's right. So the current edition of my champagne guide is the 2017-2018 edition in the market at the moment, and there'll be a new edition coming out in 12 months' time, so that's continuously updated as well.
You mentioned sparkling red, Tyson. Is that an Aussie phenomenon, or is it actually elsewhere in the world?
Well, France invented it, as they did most wine styles, but to them it was more so the sparkling Burgundies of Pinot Noir. And yet in Australia, we're much more famous, of course, with sparkling Shiraz. And that in itself is more unique, and perhaps more controversial too. It's a bit of a love or hate style. I happen to be one who loves it. And there are some remarkable wines coming from across the warmer regions of South Australia. But most importantly for me, from not far from where you are there, the beautiful wines of Great Western, in particular Sepult. Their show sparkling was my sparkling wine of the year last year, and their original sparkling Shiraz, the non-vintage, which is beautifully affordable, is a great drink for under $30.
That's a cracker.
It is, and that's a palate cleanser at Christmas lunch for me.
It's beautifully food-friendly, because that's the style of wine you can drink on a hot day, and we don't have cold days over Christmas in Australia, of course, but it has the confidence to rise up to turkey or ham or full-on red meat dishes, but also the elegance. Give it a bit of a chill, but not like a fridge chill, just a bit of a chill to tone it down, and you can drink it with salads, and it really is the ultimate Christmas beverage.
So on that theme then, when we are having people over for Christmas, what do we... give us some wines to have a look, or, you know, sparklings to have a look at.
Absolutely. So the first recommendation is the best bargain sparkling on the shelves right now. It's a beautiful wine, so much so that when I first tasted it, it was created by Nat Fryer under the Ninth Island label. It's the new Ninth Island Sparkling Rosé, and you can get it at street price for under $20, even under $25 at full price. When I first tasted it, I jumped in my car, drove to one of the big supermarket stores, bought a six-pack, brought them home straight away, because I couldn't believe that someone could create a traditional method sparkling wine with all the bells and whistles of the champagne process from beautiful, cool climate Piper's River, northern Tasmanian fruit, mostly Pinot, and sell it for that price. And then when I tasted the version that was in the stores, I realised it was, in fact, exactly the same, and they had pulled off the impossible.
So that's a Ninth Island Sparkling Rosé.
Ninth Island Sparkling Rosé, non-vintage. So that's the way, that's my big party entertainment wine. If you've got 1,000 people coming over for Christmas lunch, you can afford that wine. If it's a small intimate group and you want to push the boat out a little bit further, it's time to step up to champagne. One of my favourite champagnes right now is Charles Heidsieck.
Oh, yeah.
It is the beautiful boutique sister house of Piper Heidsieck, and it's non-vintage Brut Reserve and it's non-vintage Brut Rosé. Both under $100 and exceptional expressions of some of the longest aged of the entry non-vintage champagnes from beautiful fruit sources.
Wow, that's a good tip. And so are we finding something like that at Dan's and the big stores, or is it more a boutique bottle shop?
Good question. It'll be available in some of the better sort of inner city chain stores, but more readily available through the boutique spots, like in Melbourne, Prince Wine Store is a very good one for boutique champagnes. And while you're there too, there are some exceptional champagne growers, and Australia unfortunately drinks less champagne growers than other major champagne markets, but these little estates who grow their own fruit and make their own wines are well worth exploring, because they're one of the more interesting and high quality angles on champagne. And Prince Wine Store has three of my favourite growers, André Clouet, Vilmar and Pierre Peters, all of which are exceptional and relatively affordable too, among the top quality champagnes.
And the guys at the Prince Wine Store are well versed in these things, to give you a bit of a hand when you go in there to have a look.
So much so that those three names I've just mentioned, they are in fact the Australian importers for those brands, so they know them better than anybody else.
Right, fantastic.
That's great. So what about Prosecco? Who are you finding doing some great work there?
So the thing with Prosecco is that it's cheap, and that's why it's done so well globally. It's not made from the champagne varieties, nor with the full champagne method. And so it's an easy, more neutral, fruit-friendly, less complex style of sparkling. And for that reason, I don't think it's worth spending a lot of money on the top Proseccos. But the beautiful guys up in the King Valley, and another one of your locals there in Melbourne, are doing the best in Australia. And names like Del Zotto are some of the founders of this style in that area. They're affordable, they are reliable, they are easy drinking summer drinks that you can chill a little bit more than you might champagne and just enjoy it without thinking too much about it, but a good way to celebrate.
Yeah, it is. It's an easier proposition, isn't it? You don't have to think about it too much.
Exactly, yep.
And so what are you going to put on your Christmas table?
So I'm going to look for some really food-friendly styles of sparkling, and one of my favourites right now is rosé. The rosé phenomenon globally is difficult to understate, and we're certainly seeing that in stacks and stacks of still rosés across the wine stores and restaurant lists, but we're not really seeing that in Australia in sparkling to the same extent yet, perhaps because we're a little more price sensitive and there's a little bit more cost in investing in great champagne rosé. But to me, this is the category that Australia is going to embrace over the years to come. We're already starting to see the signs of that in the sales statistics. So rosé is going to be the wine to latch onto. I love its food friendliness. I love its elegance in a warm climate. I love the fact that it's quite versatile on the table. And it's not any longer the super sweet Barbie pink juice that it used to be. So it's a beautifully coloured Christmas, if you like. It's got a little bit of Christmas red in the tint. So for me, that's a wine to really enjoy over Christmas. Don't chill it to fridge temperature. Let it warm up a bit. Serve it in big glasses, not tiny flutes, and let its exuberance show during the celebration season.
It's a good tip.
Great tip.
So for people who don't understand the difference, is it skin contact? Is that the main thing?
There are a few ways that rosé is made in the sparkling world. For the most part, probably 95% of the time, it is exactly the same juice as the sparkling white, with 5, 10, 15, 20% red wine Pinot Noir blended in to give it that beautiful pale salmon pink tint. Sometimes they will leave the Pinot Noir on its skins and macerate, as they call it in French, to make a Saignée style. That's usually a bigger rosé with a bit more colour and a bit more structure, but not done so commonly because it's a more tricky method to pull off.
Mm. So we look at it and we go, it's going to be dry, typically, these days.
There are very few champagne rosés that are sweet.
Yeah,
if you're buying entry-level, if it's cheap, it might be a little bit sweeter, but the beautiful rosés of Tasmania are quite dry too. And that Ninth Diamond that I mentioned before, the sparkling rosé for $20, is beautifully dry. There's some fruit sweetness there, but not sugar sweetness from those parts.
Yeah, sure. Oh, well, that's a good tip. Got to get one of those.
Absolutely.
Definitely.
Yeah. So your Effervescence Tasmania next weekend?
Yes, that's right. There are a few festivals coming up. Effervescence Tasmania is the big festival next weekend. And my Taste Champagne Festival, which is now the biggest champagne showcase outside of the region itself anywhere in the world, is coming back to Melbourne in August next year. We've just released tickets this last Friday, tastechampagne.com.au. And on the 26th of August next year, we will be bringing the biggest showcase that Australia's ever seen to Melbourne. Melbourne's always our biggest city of all of the states across Australia. We do this around the country. And this year we showcased 81 houses and 267 cuvées. And next year's shaping up to be even bigger.
Yeah, wow.
Where are you going to have that, Tyson?
That'll be at the ballroom of the Plaza Ballroom under the Regent Theatre, because there's no other venue in the Melbourne that's big enough, nor sufficiently glam, if you like, for 267 champagnes on one day.
Wow. Well, tastechampagne.com.au?
That's it.
Is that it? Yeah, great. Well, I think that's a must do.
Absolute must do. So get your tickets.
Tyson, we're out of time, unfortunately, but we will get the guide and we will book tickets for that event, and everyone else should too. So thanks for the tips. You're always a wealth of knowledge for all things sparkling.
Thank you, Simon. Thank you, Nick. A wonderful sparkling season to you both, and
you too.
I look forward to raising a glass with you in person sometime soon.
Perfect.
Great.
Thanks very much.
Good on your toast.
Cheers, guys.
Have a good one.
Bye. Bye.